you sorted out your really echoey room that you started recording the podcast in?
Yeah, the echoey room, yeah.
What steps have you taken to de-echo the room?
Close the door.
Yeah?
Yeah. Hoovered yesterday.
Have you hoovered? Okay, it'll be the echo granules that get lodged in the carpet. That'll be the problem.
Exactly. Thousands of micro echo granules.
This could be a sort of pompadour for the audience. Mm. I could turn off the plugin I use to try and take away some of the reverb and show them just what the raw sound of Henry in an echo room is. I have to deal with
the raw gloves off sort of like bare knuckle fighting version of me.
Exactly.
Of my voice, just absolutely unfiltered. Can I say, I didn't actually know we were recording. How long have we been recording for?
1 minute and 31 seconds. And you're getting cancelled, my friend.
That's all it takes. 1 minute, 30 seconds of real me.
We can turn off the recording if you'd like.
No, not at all. I just didn't know we were recording. So whatever I was doing at the beginning, that was genuine. That was unfiltered. That was real.
Panic now.
Yeah.
Flashing across Henry's face. He was thinking, what was I doing? What was I doing? I was talking about all the big game I'd shot last week.
After doing my usual big game brag, but I always... it's the only way I can really relax into a conversation.
The echo has been reduced because there's the head of a mega buffalo now dangling from the ceiling. It's soaking up some of the sounds.
And the camera's probably catching the fact that I'm still wearing these onyx hooves that I always wear at the beginning of a recording to get myself into the mood. Clipsy-clopping across the savannah. Just like in conversational terms, mm-hmm. isn't it? Clippity-clopping, bounding from idea to idea, like that onyx was bounding from hedge to hedge.
Yeah. Do you mean oryx?
No, we've had this conversation.
Have we?
doesn't mind. He doesn't. He's happy to hunt antelope or gemstones. He doesn't care.
Either, I don't mind.
He'll shoot anything when he's out there.
I can do the full stole with jewels on one hunt. Do you know what I mean? I can do all the accessories that...
Is the hunt and mining experience afternoon?
Yeah. It's
it's the full
afternoon. It's currently the most unethical holiday available in the world.
Hunt in the morning, become the foreman of an illegal mine in the afternoon.
And put all those photos up on the dark web. Yeah. No, onyx is a kind of... isn't it? It's a kind of prairie... oh, no, it is a gemstone, isn't it, onyx? No wonder that holiday went so badly. I went big game hunting for onyx, and then I went oryx mining. Didn't come up with anything. No, what was an oryx?
Oryx? It's the thing you meant at the beginning.
It's the thing I meant. That's a brain refiling that needs to happen that I don't think is ever going to happen now.
It's too late, isn't it?
It's too late to refile that.
But also, I think we're in a danger zone of, I think we might have talked about this before, because I think
we've had this entire conversation.
That I went to a zoo that specialised in oryxes, but I can't remember if I told you this before.
I don't remember that. I'm sure that, I think the oryx-onyx thing has come up, but I don't remember that detail. That doesn't mean that it didn't happen. My memory is dreadful and getting worse by the day.
Isn't a zoo that focuses on one animal a farm?
Yeah, the gift shop was very meat heavy, actually.
You very rarely see a zoo that's got an abattoir attached in one of the back buildings.
Basically, it had all the stuff you'd get in a zoo.
Yeah.
Lions, cheetahs.
Yeah, biltong.
Always a really small and disappointing crocodile.
Yeah.
A microdile.
they're so annoying, aren't they? Because when you're a kid, you learn all about crocodiles. You learn that they're these big and fearsome... you know, dinosaurs, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
But then
when
you go to Bristol Zoo, the one they've got is like sort of handbag-sized, basically.
It's sort of snoozy caiman.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah, it's always rubbish.
It's basically, it's slightly smaller than the keyring of it you can buy in the gift shop. Yeah. You actually can't make keyrings that small. That's how small that is.
Similarly, pygmy hippo is like, they are very cute, but when you're a kid, you just want to see a massive hippo, don't you?
Also, can I say, we have had this conversation as well before.
Oh!
We've talked about the pygmy hippos in London Zoo. We've even had correspondence about them.
Have we reached a sort of podcast event horizon?
I think we have. Oh, no.
I think everything is within the podcast sort of singularity now. So nothing can escape or go into the podcast. It just has to recycle its own matter forever.
What a treat for our subscribers.
But they're getting a new take on old topics, right?
They're getting a new take on old topics. It's three beans reheated. That's what it is from now on.
Yeah, so the experience is no longer like just listening to a conversation amongst friends. It's more like visiting a too old uncle who's regurgitating the same anecdotes and poorly thought through opinions. You just got to sit through it.
Did you know I met Jimmy White back in 1987?
Yeah. Yes, I do know that because it's the 58th time you told me, and I am Jimmy White. Yeah, so essentially it's a chat. We've created a banter black hole. The only way to escape it would be for one of us to penetrate into the actual singularity itself. But for that to happen, in banter terms, we'd have to become infinitely stretched, wouldn't we? We'd have to become very, very, very stretched.
Well, all it would take is for one of us to have a new experience and be able to talk about it, but that's not going to happen.
But that would involve getting out of the black hole, which you can't, literally matter cannot escape it. Concepts cannot enter it.
But I think also, you know, my life is at such a stage of just kind of drudgery where it's just always the same.
Well, that's why it's called the event horizon. There are no more events.
I've been to every event I'm going to go
to. Yeah, you've been to all the weddings.
Yeah.
you've been to every birthday party. I mean, you go to new birthday parties, but they can only repeat things that have happened in previous ones you've been to.
Yeah.
In different sort of combinations. Mm. If one of us was to take up, what's that Spanish dancing where you whack the floor really hard with your feet?
Flamenco?
Flamenco. Would that do it?
One of us needs to become a flamenco dancer.
I'm just thinking, what's it going to take?
So we have a flamenco diary section.
For example.
Yeah, that's probably not a great example because it's only a small hop, skip and a jump and you're talking about guitars again, aren't you? And Henry's back to square one.
I think flamenco is itself just a combination of things we've talked about before. Shoes, guitars.
Spanish people.
Spanish people. We've got all the component parts have actually already been.
Songs about ham. Yeah.
It's in there already. But here's the way I like to think of it is, I like to think of banter as a box of Lego chunks.
Okay.
You've built the helicopter. You've built the police station. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? You know what you do? You do what I did at a friend's roast meal on Sunday.
I'm glad you said meal. I thought you'd been invited to like a Comedy Central style roast.
It was just me and a lovely roast beef with lots of really nice Yorkshire puddings and Jimmy Carr absolutely slaying each other.
Roast My Roast, potential TV format.
Lovely.
Hello, millionaire. Sorry, guys. I'm leaving the podcast. I've made a million from Roast My Roast.
Roast My Roast.
Billy Connolly, those carrots are shit.
Yeah, so this isn't a good... Is that good audition, Henry. Mike, it's your turn.
Oh, damn.
Well, those parsnips aren't very glossy, are they?
And whose celebrity parsnips are you talking about?
Daley Thompson. You should have used some of the cream you use to oil between your thighs when you're doing pole vaults and stuff on your parsnips. I'm not getting in either, am I?
Millennials have no idea what you're talking about.
I mean, I've stuffed it.
Yeah, sorry, this is very Gen Z focus, Mike. So
yeah, it's a very Gen Z sort of format, isn't it, Roast My Roast?
Hence the Billy Connolly example.
If you're mentioning Daley Thompson, you may as well be mentioning, you know, King Nebuchadnezzar. Or Ethelred the Unready.
Yeah.
Although, Henry, I wonder, he hasn't actually been getting back to me. I wonder if you can put in a good word with Eamon Holmes over at the Owlfuckers podcast.
Oh, yeah.
He's not been replying to my emails, and we want him to be the roast master.
Roast My Roast. With Eamon Holmes.
Yeah, well, he, as you know, or I don't know if you do know this, but he has become, he's got deeper and deeper into character with Owlfuckers. Right. So it is hard to communicate, it's hard to get an answer out of him. Also, anything to do with food, it'll have to be palletized.
So it has to come out as well. Can't even get in.
He'll only eat something if he first sees it from a very, very, very great height. So you'll have to get Eamon onto a crane, and the roast will have to be at least 1,000 feet underneath him, so he can barely see it.
And then he's unleashed from a sort of from a bungee cord. Is that right?
He's unleashed from a bungee cord, but with a parabola. So it's a parabolized bungee, whereby he can't go straight down and up again because that's not how owls work, Mike.
Okay.
So it has to be parabolized, so he'll sort of swing down and forwards in an arc.
I see.
And he then tries to grasp as much of the roast as he can in his jaws.
With his feet?
His jaws. Well, jaws and feet. So what he'll do is he then swoops up the other end of the parabola, like an owl would. And what he tries to do is, well, what he has to do is he'll have part of the roast in his mouth and part of it in his feet. And he'll effectively do what he understands an owl to do with a mouse, which is break its back.
Crumbs.
By
stuff it with a tiny onion.
Stuff it with a tiny onion. Gulp it down. Yeah, and then of course then the pelleting begins. So if you're happy to catch, if you think you've got the budget to make all that happen,
well, that sounds like great telly.
Yeah, it is pretty extraordinary.
If something is crying out to have a GoPro, connected to it,
it's always been Eamon Holmes. I mean, throughout, yeah,
yeah.
To see the world from that perspective at that pace and with that intensity, the Eamon's eye view has always been TV's.
It's the Holy Grail, isn't it?
It's the Holy Grail
of light entertainment.
Of light entertainment.
I feel like we might have to explain to foreign listeners. I think maybe what a roast is.
No.
The meal.
Really?
Well, maybe. I mean, roast beef, people think of roast beef, don't they? Internationally as a British thing.
Oh yeah, it's even the nickname of the Brits by the French, isn't it?
Well, how would you define a roast, Ben?
Well, it's a meat, it's a quite bad meal in which everything is roasted apart from
the gravy.
You know what it is? It's very much a kind of it feels very Tudor, doesn't it? Or it's very historical. It feels like it's not a modern meal, is it? It's very...
You're trying to recreate a Tudor feast.
You're trying to recreate a Tudor feast for about, well, 12 to 18 quid.
Is this in a restaurant or in a...
I'm thinking about a pub. I'm thinking about the pub roast here.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
And I think I want to explain to the international listening audience that this is a meal that about 10% of the population will eat every weekend without fail, regardless of the temperature outdoors.
That's true.
It could be 38 degrees centigrade and it's time to roast a bird and roast some root veg.
That's true. And it has to happen on Sunday and the day will be ruined if for some reason the roast can't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's why any cruise ship that launches from British ports have to be equipped to be able to manage a roast on a Sunday. Otherwise, they're looking at a major mutiny.
Yeah, it's true. It's a once a week sort of necessity, isn't it? To keep the morale of the nation even vaguely sort of on track, isn't it?
I will very rarely have a roast. I mean, I'll never make one. Never. And in fact, the couple of times I have done it, I found it so stressful. There are too many plates to spin, basically.
I'm actually, surprisingly, it's one of the few times in life where I... Well, I was going to say, actually, what I was going to say was it's one of the few times in my life where I sort of, I become really quite sort of focused when I'm, because I can cook a roast. I mean, I can cook a roast. I can cook a Christmas roast.
Big talk.
Which is big talk. That's the winning the Champions League of roasts.
Yeah.
Isn't it? If you can cook a Christmas roast, that's the bit, all eyes are on you.
Without having a full emotional breakdown, yeah.
Without having a full emotional breakdown. Strangely, it's in the kitchen where I find my sort of there's a kind of serenity comes over me, or at least a kind of grace under pressure. Now I realize I'm saying that's how it feels from my perspective because I'm experiencing time, but so that's my GoPro, but the GoPro of anyone else sort of observing me, it's a sort of grouchiness. It's next level grouchiness.
Sweating, swearing man.
Sweating, swearing man. Leave me alone. What? What are you saying?
Covered in 100 tiny burns.
Yeah. Why are you talking to me when I've got carrots? Why are we talking when there's carrots?
Is this about carrots? Is this urgent about the carrot batons? Go for it, but you've got to tell me now. If it's not, then what the hell are you doing here, please? Thank you.
Yeah. And if you've got an issue with the carrot batons, can you please refer to them by name? Yes, I've named all the individual carrot batons so that they don't mutiny. Yeah. I have to respect them individually and as a collective. We're a team. Get out.
Do you know how many piping hot metal trays I've got to deal with at any one moment?
Oh, God. I don't even look for the oven gloves anymore. I know I've lost them. Ah! Yes, I just hold on to the trays. Ah!
It's fine. It'll be part of the gravy.
You've got to hand it to me. I can put bits of ham in a gravy. It's laughter in the dark. Get out! So many hot trays. I'm actually still screaming from the third hot tray ago that I held onto. I'm three screams behind. I'm holding onto so many hot trays so often. Oh, God. Yeah. There's so many hot trays. You're right.
Yeah.
And oven gloves.
And nowhere to put them down is my problem. You know, my kitchen.
Except on other metal trays.
You'd need an unlimited amount of space in your kitchen to be able to put the hot trays down. You know, you're sort of always holding one and then there's another one you're having to hold.
You know what I do? It's not something I do as a cook. Is I develop a cook. Because I've got ultra focus on the roast. Everything being nice. The right things being hot and the right things being the right texture. Especially the roast potatoes, they're the absolute kind of...
Yeah, they're the bellwether, aren't they?
They're the bellwether, yeah, yeah, exactly. They have to be crisp on the outside, soft on the inside. I'm so ultra-focused on it that a thing happens is I develop a kind of mental hierarchy of importance of things. So basically, there'll come a point where I go, well, I have to put this metal tray down. It's got parsnips on it. All that is a 1950s style digital radio. It can fuck off. I'll just slam the tray through it. And I'll start prioritizing things, reprioritizing things. So
Well, the number of oblong burn marks around the kitchen at the end of the roast.
Oblong burns everywhere.
I think once you get to the point where you're putting a chopping board on the floor and you're putting stuff on that.
I put things on the floor because the floor is one of the only... dependable heat conductors after a certain point that'll conduct heat away from a metal tray. If you see what I mean. I'll put things on the floor under tables, but I just shove things out of the way, and that's why the level of mess that I create is, you know, except is horrific. But look at those potatoes. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay. We've lost the curtains. We've lost the curtains. They've gone. Half of the garden is flooded. We're not sure how that happened.
You had to take the window out of its frame to lay it on its side on the patio so that you could put some hot trays on that. Yes.
Sure. Alfred will never play the oboe again because both Alfred and the oboe have been destroyed.
The oboe is being used to hold a lemon inside the arse of a turkey. Sure.
And when it plays the scale of G, we know it's ready.
If you play We Wish You a Merry Christmas into the oboe, the turkey's rear wings stumps will gyrate almost as if to the tune.
Rear wings stumps?
I don't know.
I don't think turkeys have a front set and a back set. Are you roasting a dragonfly?
I'm roasting a cross between a turkey and a drone. Yeah, so that's what happens. So essentially, there is order. There's order on the table. The parsnips are the right colour. The carrots are the right colour. the carrots are glossy with a little bit of sweetness. The gravy's hot.
Oh yeah, the order on the table is in direct contrast to the level of
rubble
of chaos and rubble
everywhere else in the exactly, kitchen. Yeah. You have to cut out all other noise when you're making a roast. Because also it's all about temperatures and times.
And then it's all eaten in 2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes.
Gone. And no one's touched the fucking red cabbage.
No one's touched the fucking red cabbage!
But yeah, I think it does need explaining. And I think we have explained it. But I don't think that's well known really around the world, is it?
About the roast?
Yeah.
No, but there's the American kind of Thanksgiving thing, isn't there? That's the...
Yeah, so do they just do it once a year, basically? Or maybe at Christmas? What do they have at Christmas in America?
Maybe they do Christmas as well. But yes, but the idea that you do a sort of miniaturized version of that every single Sunday, I think, would feel odd to most people.
What do Americans eat at Christmas?
It's just a huge burger.
go around the family burger.
They pass around, yeah, it gets carved and stuff. It's just a big burger.
This isn't an episode.
Yes.
No.
No.
May have sounded like an episode, but it is not an episode.
No, no. Come on.
No, we're having November off, aren't we?
Yes. This is just to say we're not here for November. We'll be back in December. And November's kind of like roast time, isn't it? You know, the kind of production of roasts will start
My first roast of the season this weekend.
Did you?
This is what I was telling you about before, because it was an excellent roast pork, which a friend of mine made. It was superb. The crackling. There was the red cabbage, Mike, but everyone had some. It was lovely.
Oh, good.
There was a brilliant gravy. The potatoes were nearly perfect.
Oh.
Okay, that was a little bit.
No, the potatoes were very good under the circumstances. Yeah, you couldn't complain about the potatoes.
Well, if this friend is listening, this friend is going to be in pieces at that withering criticism of their potatoes.
He's never mentioned the podcast to me, so he can screw himself. He doesn't listen. But if he does, the food, it was magnificent. It was really, really good.
So what was the problem with the potatoes?
There wasn't a problem with them. They just weren't exceptional.
That's damning.
I'm sorry, but it's a very, very high bar. No, the potatoes were pretty good. I can't. What else was there? This red cabbagey thing was lovely, though. That sort of Christmassy, spicy-ish, slightly red cabbage.
Really cinnamon? Good.
I think there may have been some cinnamon, some mace or star anise, one of those things, one of those flavours. It was mouth-watering. And the crackling was bloody brilliant. It was like really, really crispy and hard to get. I mean, yeah, but lovely. This is why the roast in a restaurant or pub is generally a bit shit, because it's all about the timing. Everything, the time's coming together. Whereas in a restaurant, you're running that kitchen over, you might have 70, 80 covers.
Bit of jargon there.
An hour.
Yeah.
And the chef's a drug addict. Is normally the problem.
The chef's a drug addict. He's locked himself in that big fridge and he's just doing drugs, and he has been for about 2 months. So that's why it tends to be a bit sloppy and a bit, isn't it?
So, Mike, November?
Yeah.
How does it look for you?
I'll be in a state of deep sleep, largely speaking.
Okay.
You're hibernating, aren't you?
Yeah. Very much.
Yeah.
Very, very, very deep hibernation. So today I'm just going to eat as many sort of fish skins as I can to make sure that I've got to...
You want to get the calcium up, don't you?
Calories and the calcium and the oils to last me through. And then get myself to a safe place for the slumber, but a place where I can also be prodded awake at the end of November in a way that I'm not going to be a danger to anyone.
Well, best of luck, Mike. Is there an area of Exeter people should try and avoid?
Probably sort of, I'd say, sort of southeast Dartmoor, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's useful, isn't it? Because then you can wake up and directly just eat a horse straight away.
Eat a wild pony. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. For me, I will be spending November the 1st, I'll be making a big bolognese.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try and make it last until December.
Well, it's the November bolognese, isn't it, for you?
Yeah.
Ben, do you do that thing that, like, people do with sourdough, whereby you keep the actual, the
bolognese starter?
The bolognese starter is actually still the same one. You'll carry that
kernel of you've got a kernel of a bolognese that's still, it's actually technically alive, isn't it? And has been since 1993.
Because, well, you've got one that since your like undergrad days, isn't it?
Well, I bought one on eBay the other day that goes back to the Napoleonic Wars. It was Napoleon's own.
Wow.
Yeah. A sort of Corsican bolognese.
Right.
Yeah, so that's me. That's Henry?
Good. I'm going to be... it's all about catching up on theatre for me in November, because it's with the podcast and everything. It's hard to have time the rest of the year. So,
Lion King,
Lion King,
Les Mis,
Les Mis. I particularly looking forward to checking out Uncle Vanya with Robert Peston, Peston's Vanya. Everyone's talking about it.
He's playing all of the parts, isn't he?
He's playing all of the parts, yeah.
Well, apart from the daughter, who's played by Nick Robinson.
That's right.
Oh, because, of course, John Sopel is doing One Man Cats, isn't he? And he's taking that on the road. So I don't know if it would be harder for you to see.
Sopel's Cats is on the road at the moment. It's in Leicester. Yeah. I might try and pop up there. But I have heard he's absolutely terrible. So, yeah, a lot of that kind of stuff.
Quite a busy one for you, then.
Just cultural, you know, topping up my culture cylinders.
Right, so that's the end of this non-episode. If you want more beans, of course, you can go to patreon.com/threebeansalad, where you can listen to our extra beans bonus episodes. Lots of extra stuff to listen to there. If you find yourself at an aural loose end. And just before we finish, we've had a theme tune sent in by Joss.
Oh, yes, please.
Lovely.
Dearest Beans, I've spent the last 2 days on bed rest.
Oh, dear.
Lost upon the rolling seas of high fever and acute testicular pain.
Ooh. Oh, dear.
Yesterday, I was informed by an unapologetic young GP that I've contracted a mysterious and apparently non-specific bollock infection.
Bloody hell.
Whilst I cannot fault the care I was given, my doctor's inexplicable youth served to remind me of my own fragile mortality, which has deepened my woe. Somewhere between sleeping, waking, and despair, my fevered mind produced this surprisingly energetic theme tune for you. It has spoken to me and called itself Mission Impossible, Mike Oldfield. As I lie wretched in the long shadows of my lost youth and aching testes, I find comfort in the hope that my creation may one day reach your ears. Forever yours, Joss. Oh, so this was really sent in the heart of a raging fever.
A raging orchitis. Poor yeah. Josh.
But I think like a wild flower that has grown from a dark place. Maybe.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Let's see.
So thanks, Joss. And to all listening, see you in December. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.